welcome to this episode of Keep It Positive, Sweetie. I'm Crystal Renee Hazlett. And today I have with me someone that you guys are, I'm sure, really familiar with, but did not know that is my big brother, Shabazz, the OG.
You did.
You know what I'm saying?
You understand me. What's up, baby?
Nothing much. How you doing?
Chilling.
Happy to be here. All the way from Miami to rainy Atlanta.
Man, I'd have came from Greece to get here for you. Yeah, Miami wasn't about nothing.
Oh, thank you.
You know what I'm saying? That's practically walking distance for you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm so happy to have you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we always start the show with a song or a quote, but we actually just said it. One of our favorite sayings is, you understand me.
And
it's all one word.
You understand me.
You understand me.
Yeah.
You understand me. Oh my gosh. I love you, man, for real.
I love you too.
I'm proud of you.
I'm like beyond, like proud is an understatement. Proud is cliche. Like,
yeah.
Man, you talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Like you said, a lot of people, most people, unless they're really close and tight with us, don't understand my and your relationship.
They do not.
And from 2007 to now, like, I'm happy, but I'm not surprised. Because I always, you know, I'm not one of those people who say, yeah, she always knew she could do it. We really talked about this 17 years
we
ago.
We did.
You know, we just didn't know which level you were going to reach, whether it's going to be fashion, whether it was going to be music, but we just knew.
We definitely knew.
At that time, Chase was a star.
I was telling Denora about my first music name was Chase, and you still call me Face.
I still call it Chase Face.
Chase Face.
Put the face on the back of Chase, but now it's just Face.
Yeah.
This is my face. And people be looking at me like when I do come around, like, who's Face?
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. You have been there from the beginning. 2007 we met. I was still living in Washington, D.C. You were managing Q Parker from 112 at the time, like doing road management.
Yeah, road managing, yep.
Traveling with him. And I remember us just hitting it off. You just always had this like super dope spirit about you and just super 100, like straight shooter, no sugarcoating, all funny. Like, people don't understand. You are funny.
Somebody told me yesterday I should do stand-up.
Bruh, no, I'm serious. Because some of the stuff that comes out of your mouth, I'm like,
I just be being myself.
Yeah, I know.
I probably freeze up in front of an audience trying to crack jokes. Because it's not like I'm not trying to be funny.
Right.
That's what it is. I don't be trying to be funny.
Yeah.
I just
be funny.
I just come out funny sometimes.
Yeah. But we met, and I was in a transitional phase in my life where I was leaving Capitol Hill, trying to decide what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I remember when I decided to move to Atlanta, you all rallied behind me and was like, Chris, whatever you want to do, we got you.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm talking about when I tell you guys about the hard time that I had when I moved to Atlanta, this man was one of the people that had my back when I moved here.
No question.
And I thank you for that. I remember I was pursuing music. We went down to Tennessee to do something for homecoming.
Yep.
And you all came down. You've been to my hometown.
To my daddy's house.
Yeah, you've been there.
You did.
And the family loves you. But it's important to remember the people that were there when it was just a dream and just a vision, you know, and you were one of those people that was definitely there and have been by my side ever since. Most people know you as Shabazz, the OG. You are the author of Flip Your Life.
Mm-hmm.
You are a speaker. You are the money team motivator and entrepreneur. And you started your career early in the music business as a rapper and radio station intern in high school.
Yep.
And from there, you propelled into promotions, artist booking, road management, and ultimately project manager and consultant. Which you've been a consultant in my whole life since I've known you.
I'm everybody consultant. I need a firm at this point.
You do. Oh my God.
I think I need to start a firm.
Yeah, put everybody on retainer.
That's my role.
Yeah, that
is, the problem is I can't. The retainer part is where it gets tricky because everybody I consult with, I love. They're my family.
He's like, oh, I'll give you that for free, right?
Yeah, you know. That's who I am. That's what I do.
So I know we met in our. Our connection came through music initially.
Right.
What was it in the beginning that brought you to music? Because I know you've been in the industry for a minute.
Like it goes all the way back to that internship you spoke about.
Because
that was 18.
Wow.
You know, the internship came at 17.
Because
my mom kicked me out the house at 18.
Baz, how you?
I'll get to that. Okay. But I'm just trying to you know how you, certain things make you remember certain things?
Yeah.
So the internship came before I was 18 because 18 is when she said, we need you to leave. Mm-hmm. So 17 is when the internship started. But in high school, probably 15, 16, mm-hmm. is when I started rapping. Mm-hmm. Like, I was really good at rapping. Mm-hmm. Like, I was, that's, you know, it's funny how life works, because where I am now, I found my purpose. I believe this is exactly, you know, what I'm supposed to be doing, the things that I'm doing now. But at that time back then, you know, I really, really, really aspired to be a rapper.
Yeah.
In those days, an MC.
Yeah.
And I was really good. And what happened is we had a talent show at my high school, William Penn High. Me, my group, my DJ, my man Eric Day, DJ Prep, and my man John Hamilton, John Doe. We had a group called the Devastating Three. I was a rapper. Mm-hmm. And Lady B, who was a very big radio personality at Power 99 FM in Philly at the time, she was one of the judges at the talent show. And afterwards, you know, I was just so smitten with her because she was fine. I'm talking about, she had a mink drag on the floor.
Oh, wow.
Super slim, pretty. I remember she had on Obsession perfume. You know, back then, Obsession for women was that thing, you know? She had that Obsession
the
on.
The fact that you remember the scent.
It's nostalgic. I can smell it right now. I remember that day like it was yesterday. You know, Lady B came in there and shut the stage down. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget, I ran up to her and afterwards, and we had on the airbrush sweatshirts.
Yes.
And she signed she autographed my shirt. Mm-hmm. And I took it right downtown to the gallery, to the guy who airbrushed our shirts, because I had on an airbrush shirt. I took it right back. His name was Jay. Mm-hmm. Took it right back to Jay. Said, yo, I need you to airbrush this autograph.
Yeah.
Because I don't need this to come off.
Oh.
And I wish I still had that shirt, but that was the beginning of me getting into the realms of entertainment, because she brought me on as our intern at the radio station. So she had a show called Street Beat. Mm-hmm. And Street Beat aired every Sunday from 12 to 4.
Okay.
So every Sunday around 3:55, the last 5 minutes, she would throw on instrumentals and let her Street Beat MCs rap.
Okay.
And I was one of them. Disco C, Prince Little E. Another guy, Flash D, but Flash was in jail at the time, so he wasn't there when I was there. But those were the Street Beat MCs. Mm. And I used to rap on the radio every Sunday towards the end of her show, and that's how I got started.
Wow. Listen, I feel like even for me out of college, I got started as an intern. I feel like that's always like the gateway to doing what you really want to do.
Right. That practice.
Yes, that
somebody
practice.
Giving you an opportunity to, you know, to segue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's so good. And then from there, like, tell me about all the other people that you worked with, because I know you've.
So the whole process was internship with her, and this one I started to meet people.
Okay.
I started to meet people. And like back then, like, I was really meeting. This one I started networking.
Okay.
This one I learned how to network. Mm-hmm. I learned how to network from being around so many celebrities at a young age. Like, I was really around when LL used to get out the limo with the radio on his shoulder.
Oh, what? Really?
Yes, he would come to the radio station, Power 99. LL would get out. He would, when he was really walking around with his radio, because that was his thing.
Wow.
You know, can't live without my radio.
Mm-hmm.
Run DMC, I met back then. MC Light, I met back then. Like, I met a lot of people. Jahlil from Houdini was the first celebrity phone number I ever got.
Wow.
Like, Jahlil from Houdini. You know what I mean? That was the first celebrity phone number I ever got. Like, and they just took a liking to me because the person I am now is the guy that I was back then.
Gotcha.
So I never, you know, was never the wear out my welcome type. Was never too hype. Like, you know, people, for my benefit, gravitated towards me. So after the internship with D, I did try to pursue the music career. Mm-hmm. You know, I did rap for a while with my partner. His name was Pro, and we was working with another Philly legend, Schoolie D. Mm-hmm. So we would do shows with Schoolie, open up for him at times. But at the same time, I was in the street.
Gotcha.
So being in the street kind of disrupted the path. You know, that's what I'll say on the surface.
Yeah.
Ultimately and overall, it just wasn't in the cards for me. But if we stay on the surface, the streets kind of disrupted it because Pro ended up going to prison and then it just kind of fizzled out for me. But then someone who I met during my internship, because now we're going to go from 17 to about 22, someone who I met during my tenure as an intern, his name is Troy Shelton. Troy took me under his wing, became my mentor, and introduced me to radio promotions. So I was, you know, every Tuesday, everybody in the music industry know Tuesdays is radio day. That's when the radio, that's when radio promoters go to the stations and try to get their records added and played. And the first project I worked was Floetry.
Oh, wow.
And Ron Osley's Body Kiss album when he first, actually this was around the time when the Johnson Sisters, Kim and Candy, his wife, Ron Osley's wife, they had a song out as well at the time called Ice Cream. So the Floetry, the Johnson Sisters, and the Osleys is the first projects that I worked, you know, under my mentor, Troy.
Okay.
And from there came radio promotions. Then my first party promotions came in 2003.
Oh, wow.
Out in Milwaukee when we did the Rock the Mic after party, you know, with I did it with Freeway, Fab, The Young Guns, Emilio Spark. Like that was the first big event that I did. You know, I was running around with one of my guys at the time, and he had, you know, put me in position to make that happen. And you know, that was my first real, you know, party promotion stint.
Yeah.
And then from there, it just, you know, those relationships just built. Like that's when I met Fab, 2003. That's when I met Bleak. You know, and now these guys, fast forward, these are, this is family.
Right.
So a lot of my music relationships started from booking them.
Right.
Like my relationship with Trey came from booking him first.
Yeah.
So then, you know, once you start moving around a lot, and again, when you know how to move and you know how to move in and out of rooms and you conduct yourself the right way, you know, people receive you. You know, the more people I met, the bigger the network grew, and here we are.
Here we are.
You know, with a clean face.
Right.
Clean face and a strong name.
See, and that's important.
That's the key.
It is the key.
That's the real key.
Yeah.
To move through this business with a good name, a clean face.
Yeah.
You know, everything else can come and go. But once your name is destroyed and your face is dirty, it's done.
It's done. That's so good. Growing up in Philadelphia, I know I'm friends with Meek Mill, and I've heard the stories of what it's like. And I remember you calling it Rilladelphia.
Now it's Killadelphia.
Right.
Yeah.
And growing up, you talked about getting into the streets, getting in trouble, getting kicked out. What was it like during that time growing up, and what were some of your challenges as a young Black man trying to grow up in that environment?
So I was born in Cordell, Georgia, about an hour and 45 minutes from here. So my mom went to Philly when I was 14 months. She went back to Georgia. We went back to Cordell when I was in third grade. Then we went back to Philly when I was in seventh grade. So seventh grade is really where I, you know, got implemented and stamped in Philly.
Yeah.
And initially it was very challenging. You know, I'm a country boy. You know, country boy, you know, manners, nice guy, you know, friendly,
Southern,
country accent, you know, Southerner. You know, they used to call me Virginia because I think a lot of guys, that's the furthest south they knew about.
Right.
So they used to call me Virginia at my middle school, Tilden Middle School in Southwest Philly. And it was a little rough in the beginning. You know, I've been jumped. I've been teased. I was beat up, you know, because, you know, I wasn't no fighter. Like, I didn't know nothing about, and it was, and Philly was gang infested at that time. And 81, like 80, 81, right when Ronald Reagan got shot. That's when we moved to Philly.
Wow.
Either right, I think a couple of days later, he had got shot. So, like, around the time Reagan got shot, it was a big mob war in Philly, and gangs were really prevalent. So when we got to Philly, like it was rough for me because it was a different type of transition.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those same streets that were mean to me became appealing to me. Mm. You know? Mm-hmm. And it turned me into something that I wasn't, but that I had to learn how to be because I was out there.
Right.
You know, to the point where I had a friend of mine, he's deceased now, back in probably 91, because he got killed in 92. He said to my mom, like he was from Brooklyn, and he told my mother, he was like, I don't know why he's out here with us, because he's not like us. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He's not, and I wasn't. Like, I was so different. Like, I'm about to say something crazy. I was so different that a lot of guys didn't trust me. Mm. They're like, is this nigga the police or something? Because I wasn't disloyal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I wasn't shady. Mm-hmm. I was accommodating.
Yeah.
I was honest.
Like, he was a little too nice. Like, what's up with him?
Who, if you leave it with me, ain't nothing gonna be missing.
Yep.
All the money, all the work, all the bullets, everything gonna be the way you left it. That's just what it, like.
The work, he's everything gonna be just how you left it.
You're not gonna be missing a crumb.
Yeah.
You understand me? Mm-hmm. So that was different. Yeah. Like, people weren't used to that. They weren't used to that type of loyalty. That, because, you know, the rules of the street, don't trust nobody, you can't turn your back. But I wasn't that kind of person.
Right.
By no stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. So his name was G. G told my mom, G was like, I don't know why he out here with us.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not like us. And I wasn't. Mm. Like, this guy, he was a different type of individual. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And what I learned in life is people who can't be trusted can't trust.
Come on now.
Mm-hmm. So it was foreign to see somebody like that.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So a lot of guys, you know, they just couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
But again, you know, the same streets that were mean to me became appealing to me, which, you know, which led to me, you know, eventually my mother asking me to, you know, leave her house at 18 because I just got to a point where I just was going to do what I wanted to do, you know? And it was primarily, again, when we get older, you look back at life and you realize.
Hey, sweeties. Have you ever wondered what's in the products you use on a daily basis? Well, let me tell you about Elle. Elle, like the letter, is a brand committed to providing you period care products inspired by nature, made without dyes, fragrances, and synthetic pesticides. Their pads have a breathable cotton top layer and a plant-based core, and their tampons contain an organic cotton core. Now, not only can you feel good about Elle's ingredients, but also Elle's price. With tampons and pads that protect for under $5 a month, Elle believes access to peer care is not only a fundamental right for everyone, but an opportunity for change as well. That's why Elle is on a mission to make exceptional period care accessible for all by providing funding each year to nonprofit community-based organizations around the world focused on period care accessibility, menstrual health education, and employment opportunities. So, if you're looking for a brand that aligns with your values of giving back and using products inspired by nature, look no further than Elle. If you want to learn more about their mission or browse their full range of products, visit their website at thisiselle.com. And the next time you're in the period care aisle, look for Elle pads and tampons. Choose love, choose Elle.
Why you did certain things. My mother's, to this day, she still is. She's been a Jehovah's Witness since I was 5 years old.
Wow.
So who I was as an individual, right? Because we tend to think, oh, you a child. Chance Styles place, or you a child. You ain't got no feelings, or you a child. You ain't got no say-so. Mm. But the thing about kids, they're just smaller sizes of adults. They don't have the same experience, but they're people.
Yes.
They're people with personalities. Mm-hmm. They're people with feelings. Yeah. They're people with ideas. They're people with ambitions. Mm-hmm. Like, these things rest inside of children.
Yeah.
And who I was at my core didn't correlate with the Jehovah's Witness religion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I done liked girls since I was five. You understand me? Like, I was attracted to my literally attracted to one of my mother's girlfriends when I was 5, 6 years old. I was attracted to my first grade teacher, Miss Matt, with the blonde highlights. You know? You know what I mean? You know, these are things I remember. Mm-hmm. You know, but in the Jehovah's Witness religion, you can't have boyfriends and girlfriends. Mm. You know, so.
I didn't know that. So.
Yeah, they don't do, same thing in Islam. You don't, it's either husband and wife.
Wow.
No boyfriends and girlfriends.
Well, I did not know that.
Yeah, they don't do that. So like, so I couldn't, what's the word I want to use? I couldn't fulfill my desires.
Like what I wanted to do, I couldn't do it. So yeah, let me get out of this Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah, so I wanted to play sports. Mm-hmm. Like I come from my father's side of the family, athletes.
Jehovah's Witness can't play sports either?
Because, you know, the probably now the religion is a little bit more lenient. Mm-hmm. But back then it was like anything that was outside the scope or the congregation or the affiliation of the religion was deemed bad association.
Wow.
So anything that wasn't necessary to do, you weren't really allowed to do. I had to go to school.
Yeah.
So but I didn't have to be on the basketball team.
Right.
I had to go to school, but I didn't have to be on the football team. Mm-hmm. You know, so my mother didn't allow me to do those things. And my father, you know, he used to be upset because I was a natural athlete. Mm-hmm. My father used to be so angry because he saw it. Mm-hmm. He was an athlete. My Uncle David was an athlete. My brother Scott, athlete. I come from a family of athletes on my father's side, and he saw it, and he wanted that for his son so bad.
Yeah.
But my mom wasn't having it. Mm. So at 17, you know, the older I got, just the more rebellious I came because I could no longer contain who I was as an individual.
Right.
Like, you're really hindering me. Mm-hmm. Like,
so I gotta,
I'm a very likable guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to dress nice. These girls, these women like me, and I like these women. I like these women, and you're standing in my way now.
Get out of the way.
You got a serious roadblock up here, Mom.
Yeah.
And you know, I was I had that internship with Lady B, and I used to be at the radio station, you know, with her and events, and you know, I was just enjoying that. Mm-hmm. And my mom told me, she said, "Listen. My 18th birthday was approaching, and she said, if you come in this house one more time after 12 o'clock at night, you're getting out."
Wow.
Now, mind you, Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate birthdays, none of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, not only did I come in the house after midnight on my 18th birthday, I came in with a birthday cake.
Oh,
I had a birthday cake. Sat on the top of the refrigerator.
Oh no.
Went upstairs and went to bed. Mm-hmm. My mom woke me up. Oof. She said, "You thought I was playing. Whoever just brought you home, call them and tell them to come back and get you."
Wow.
And she put me out.
Mm.
Yep.
18 years old. So had you graduated from college, from high school then?
I finished, that was my 18th birthday, April 19th, 1986. I still had 2 more months of high school.
Wow.
I finished those last 2 months at the house where I was staying at.
Wow.
Down in North Philly at my man's house with him and his dad and his uncle and his grandmother.
Mm.
Sleeping on the couch. But actually, this is a couch. A love seat.
You're like, this is
a couch. This wasn't, I might have enjoyed this. they might not have been able to get rid of me.
Right.
But, you know, sleeping 10 months with your knees up like this was uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I was out the house for 10 months before my mom let me come back.
So at what point you were raised Jehovah's, were you raised Jehovah's Witness?
Till I was 17.
Okay, and then when did you convert to Muslim?
I took my Shahada when I was 22.
Wow.
22, 23.
Because I know Philadelphia is a big Muslim community.
Yes, extremely big Muslim community.
Okay,
yes.
Wow. So what made you, I mean, was that the reason why you were interested in converting to Muslim?
Not even. I had a girlfriend at the time, mm-hmm. and I was getting money with her brothers, and I was getting money with her cousins, mm-hmm. and they were Muslim. Mm-hmm. So they introduced me to Islam. Mm-hmm. They introduced me to Islam, and just over the course of time, the more mature I got, mm-hmm. the more I resonated with Islam. My life, it was just, granted, Islam is a very disciplined religion, just like being a Jehovah's Witness. Mm-hmm. However, I believe Islam just came into my life at the right time. Mm. Because the things that you shouldn't do as a Jehovah's Witness, mm-hmm. you shouldn't do as a Muslim either. Mm-hmm. You understand me? Mm-hmm. But I think, and me and my mother had these conversations, you know, later in life, mm-hmm. that, you know, she wished she would have did a few things differently. But I told her, look, you don't owe no explanations, no mm-hmm. excuses, no apologies, because you gave us the best that you had, and what you knew how to do yeah. with what you had. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I think it's important, even when you're teaching your children religion and have them in religion, I think it's still important to still identify with your child as an individual. Mm-hmm. And don't make it so much about the religion, the religion, the religion. You can't do this, you can't. Because what'll happen is that's where the rebellion comes in. Mm-hmm. Because again, in terms of religion and practices and conduct and codes of behavior, Jehovah's Witnesses and Muslims are similar. Mm-hmm. Like Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate any holidays. Mm-hmm. Muslims don't celebrate any holidays. Mm-hmm. Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in smoking. Muslims don't. Jehovah's Witnesses believe in drinking a little alcohol, though. Muslims don't.
Yeah.
You know, so, but in terms of just resonating, mm-hmm. Islam started to resonate. I started to resonate with Islam. Islam is what gave me a conscience.
Wow. Oh, yeah, because, yeah, I can see that.
That's what happened. Wow. That, to sum it all up, Islam is what gave me a conscience. Mm-hmm. Islam established my conscious awareness of how you treat people, mm-hmm. What you should do, what you shouldn't do. Yeah. Although you're not perfect, strive for perfection. Mm. You know, be accountable for your actions. Mm-hmm. You know when you've done right, know when you've done wrong, yeah. and always carry pure intentions. Even though that's who I, you know, profess to be as an individual, Islam amplified that for
me. Got you. Okay, that's what's up. At what point in this journey in the streets and doing what you're doing did you end up getting locked up? Because I know at one point you got jammed up a bit.
Quite a few bits. Not a bit, a few bits. That started at 12.
What?
My mother told me, and we'll get to that in that book, mm-hmm. when I was 7,
yeah.
that you're going to learn everything the hard way because you don't listen.
Yeah.
So I was hard-headed mm-hmm. growing up. Mm-hmm. And I was 12 on my way from the dentist. And my mother used to always tell me about throwing rocks and playing with fire. So those, I don't know what my infatuation with rocks and fire was, but I was coming from the dentist one day and I was by myself walking down Woodland Avenue and I was throwing a rock in the air, mm-hmm. walked on up, catching it, innocent. Yeah. So I thought, mm-hmm. but the higher I threw it and caught it, the higher I threw it again, you know, testing myself.
Yeah.
Well, one time the rock got away from me, came down, hit a windshield of a moving car, and it was an off-duty cop, white dude. Mm. He jumped out, pissed, gave me the business, threw me against the gate, called the paddy wagon, and they locked me up.
So is paddy wagon a Philly word?
Yes.
Okay, because that's what Mika said in Dreams and Nightmares.
Oh, yeah, the paddy wagon. So the paddy wagon, for those that don't know, is the van. Yeah, the paddy wagon is the police, the actual van that they put you in the back of.
Okay.
So we call that the paddy wagon.
Wow.
And so they put me in the paddy wagon and took me to the precinct. Mm-hmm. And I never forget, my mother was getting ready to go to one of her meetings.
She
was on her way to get. And when they called her.
Came between the meetings now, you know you in trouble.
Listen, she didn't come. There is no coming in between of the meetings. She told him, I have something to do. I'll be there afterwards.
Look after him.
She left me there until she went to the kingdom.
12 years old.
Yeah, she left me there until after her meeting. When she came, she didn't let him open the door. She didn't let him open the gate. I was in the cell.
Oh my
and
goodness.
She did not let him open the cell immediately. She stood on the other side of the cell. Mm. And she said, what I tell you about throwing rocks?
I knew you had to say that because every mama, what I tell you?
What I tell you about throwing rocks? Mm. Like, she didn't care that I was locked up. She didn't, my mother.
Okay?
And that's why I'm the way I am to this day. Mm. People don't really understand the meaning of standing on business.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a cool new word for a lot of mm-hmm. people. I stand on the business that I stand on because that's how my mother was.
Wow.
If my mother said, don't leave this house, mm-hmm. and you go outside and get hit by a car and get your leg broke by a drunk driver,
what did I
she gonna be mad at the drunk driver later.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about him. What he get for being drunk? Oh, okay. Well, y'all handle that.
Yeah.
You. What did I tell you before I left this house?
Mm-hmm. Don't leave this house.
Wow. If you didn't go outside, your leg wouldn't be broke. Mm-hmm. I don't care about that man being drunk.
Yeah.
I care about you not doing what I told you to do. Mm-hmm. Every action has a reaction when you don't listen.
That's real.
And I learned that the hard way.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of me going to prison because I had so I switched infatuations. I went from rocks and fire to guns.
Oh, wow.
And I had a thing for guns. Well, I take that back because before rocks and fire, guns was my first love. Mm-hmm. But at five, when my mother became a Jehovah's Witness, I used to have this gun set. Mm-hmm. I had the pants, the chaps that go over your pants, had some green ones.
Yeah.
I had a vest, a hat, and 2 6-shooters. That was my everyday outfit after I came home from kindergarten.
Wow. Oh.
So I come home one day, ready to suit up.
Yeah.
My materials is nowhere to be found.
5 years old. Where is my...
Yeah, I'm... Maybe it's... So my mother, so I inquired, you know, about my items. She told me it's in the trash.
What you mean, it's in the trash, mama?
Right. What do you mean, in the trash?
Yeah.
Why? She says, Jehovah don't like guns. First of all, who is Jehovah? That's the first thing. Second thing, what does he have against my guns and my outfit?
Right.
What do you mean it's in the trash? So I go and get it out the trash. Mm-hmm. She puts it back in the trash, and this is my introduction. That's probably why I didn't like being a Jehovah's Witness, because it didn't start right.
Right.
We got off to a bad start.
Took my guns away.
Took my guns. I'm talking about the whole nine. Oh, put the whole situation in the trash.
Yeah.
Because she done went off and started studying the Bible with I never forget, Sister Jordan. As y'all can see, I got a very good memory about my past.
You do.
Sister Jordan then wrote my mom into this new belief, and it's affecting me tremendously.
Yeah, I like it.
Wasn't feeling it. Yeah, so, we got off to a bad start.
Yeah.
And so fast forward, you know, when I was probably 91. Mm-hmm. 91 is when I reconvened with the guns.
Yeah.
But they was real ones this time.
Yeah.
And I was getting caught. And it was the craziest thing because I was unlucky with them. Mm. You know, but I just kept carrying them. So I got locked up with a gun, going to court. Mm-hmm. While I'm out on bail, going to court for that gun, I get locked up with another one. Mm. So now I'm going to court for 2 guns. Mm-hmm. Then I get locked up with a third one. Now I'm going to court for 3 guns at one time. Oh, 3 open gun cases. Mm-hmm. I had a really good lawyer though, Gerald Stein and Fred Perry. They, was able to get the gun charges all consolidated to 1 charge, and I got probation.
Okay.
Cool, got probation. That was in 91, 92, mm-hmm. right? Fast forward to 96. I get locked up again with another gun, but this time I'm in Jersey. Now I had done the Philly probation and all of that, mm-hmm. but I got locked up in Jersey, in Camden. Mm-hmm. And when they saw my jacket from Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. they ain't play with me. Oh. They gave me 3 years off the rip. Mm-hmm. They was like, you're not even ready to come over. Philadelphia gave you probation and you had 3 guns. Now we're not even going to start playing with you.
Yeah.
So they gave me, Jersey gave me 3 years and I went to prison.
Wow. What was that like?
Awful.
Oh my gosh. Because we see it on TV, but
awful.
We don't know what it's like to really be in there.
Nah, it's, you know what it is? And what I learned quickly mm-hmm. that it's not necessarily the amount of time that you do. Mm. It's the conditions that you have to succumb to and be faced with and deal with. So, you know, they gave me 3 years, but I did 14 months in, 16 months on intense supervised parole mm-hmm. and, you know, finished it all. But the conditions, like being in 14 months, being in 6 different facilities.
Wow.
You know, just, you know, from this place to that place mm-hmm. and then falling under a federal investigation, then being You can't be in, I was in a minimum security camp. You can't be in a minimum, you can't be in a minimum security facility if you have an open investigation. Mm. So they have to take you out of there mm-hmm. and take me to the main prison. The main prison, which was East Jersey State Prison System at Rahway, mm-hmm. was the control center for all the smaller camps and other jails in the surrounding area. But because I wasn't sentenced to that jail, mm-hmm. they didn't have nowhere to house me, so they had to put me in the hole.
What?
So I'm in the hole for 2 months. I'm in the hole for 2 months while the feds do this investigation. Mm. You know, so it's like, it's just the conditions,
yeah.
you know, what I had to endure mm-hmm. in those 14
That's
months
over a year.
Was enough.
Yeah.
It was enough to make me know, like, this just ain't it, not for me. Mm-mm. You know, and again, you know, it's hard to break old habits. So mm-hmm. when I did come home from prison, eventually at some point in time, you know, jump back outside again. Mm-hmm. Right when you met me mm-hmm. is really when I came off the tail end mm-hmm. because it just, you met me in 07. So January 06, mm-hmm. January 06, I got locked up. I got locked up. I got caught in the middle of we was under surveillance, didn't know it, got caught in the middle of a, you know, transaction. Mm-hmm. And what wound up happening is the cops never came to court. They took money from me. They took money, but they stole some. They didn't mm-hmm. put all the money on the property receipt. Mm-hmm. So the money that they stole, they didn't record it on the property. Mm-hmm. And then they never came to court. So I ended up beating that case, and that was 2006. That was my last time in handcuffs.
Wow. And you have not looked back since?
No. Because that it, I would have really been disappointed mm-hmm. in myself
yeah.
had I went to prison for that, because I would have did a significant amount of time, one. Mm-hmm. Two, it would have been like, damn, like, you know you don't like jail.
Yeah, right. Why do you keep doing this? Right.
Like, you know you don't like this.
Yeah.
You know you don't like jail. So mm-hmm. like, why is you playing?
Yeah.
So, you know, I just decided that I was just going, you know, do what it took, but do other things that it took. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wasn't gonna keep playing with these people, man.
At all.
Cause they will give you a thousand years.
Yeah, no, with no, and they not will. Blinking eye.
Yeah, they will. I was talking to Wallow the other day. Mm-hmm. Man, Wallow was talking and you know, we was talking about the youngins, and it's like I told Lo, like, we got to remind them that Wallow didn't do the last 20 years.
Right.
They still got another 20 tucked away. If you need 20, they got 20 for you.
Mm-hmm.
Wallow didn't do the last 20 years in prison system.
Right.
They got 20 for you. They got 20 for you. Mm-hmm. You need 20, they got 20 for you.
Right.
Yeah, they got some 20s to go around.
They do, yeah.
You know what I mean? And they don't mind giving them to you they with don't. A ribbon on it.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Being that you've been incarcerated, do you do anything with people that, like, youth that are locked up or?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The most recent was it August? My last prison, no, actually, no. My most recent was in Quincy. Florida, mm-hmm. right outside of Tallahassee. I went to the county jail there, where a lot of guys, some guys are doing county time, but a lot of guys had violent crimes and they were waiting to be sentenced and be sent upstate.
Yeah.
And that was an extremely, extremely good visit.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, I was able to resonate with the guys, mm-hmm. you know, despite their circumstances, and the administration really liked the visit
mm-hmm.
because I just have a way with interaction, and I have a way with words, and I have a way with communicating with people to make everybody feel like they matter mm-hmm. despite the circumstances.
Yeah.
And one of the women who were there, and when she spoke to me afterwards, she said, you know, a lot of people have come through these doors, but I've never seen anybody hold their attention
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was told that back in 2017 when I went to a new facility in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, yo, you really are good at this. Like, mm-hmm. you really know how to keep their attention and talk, because it's because I'm not stuffy. I'm not mm-hmm. preachy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might go in there dressed just like this, shoes untied, mm-hmm. you know, because I just want to be relatable, mm-hmm. but effective.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to and not at.
Right.
So when I go to these, like even when I was in Quincy, they had me do a community event after I left the prison. And, you know, one of the most illest things that ever happened since I've been speaking is a 9-year-old girl mm-hmm. came up to me after we was finished and she cried mm. in my arm, nine, and wow. said, "Everything you said to me, everything you said today changed my whole life." Mm. I'm like,
wow.
Nine? You don't even have a whole life yet.
Right, right.
You got a wow. 9-year-old life.
Imagine what she's been through.
That's what resonated mm-hmm. with me so much. Imagine what this girl has gone through to be 9 years old
yes.
and cry and tell me that what I said mm-hmm. changed her life.
Yeah.
So those are the things that's important to mm-hmm. me. So yes, I do go to these facilities from youth to adults, from elementary school to universities. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to second graders and I've spoken at Kennesaw State.
Yeah.
Amazing. Morehouse twice. Mm-hmm. You know, I've, you know, that's my range.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. So the world knows you as Shabazz the OG.
Right.
You have taken your social media platform to spread positivity. You talk about current events and give your opinion on them. What brought that about? And at what moment did you realize, hey, I've got a following, I have a voice as well?
Oh, back to our good friend Meek Mill.
Shout out, Robert.
You know what I'm saying? Mr. Williams, you dig? Yeah, Meek was the first person to repost
wow.
one of my videos.
Wow.
Meek is
what's up, Rob Meek.
Meek is my first repost.
Hey, Kiss family. It's time to celebrate Black History Month at the Walmart Black and Unlimited Clock. One at Flatiron Plaza in New York City. One at Ovation Hollywood in Los Angeles from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with giveaways dropping every hour on the hour. It's the perfect time to try, like, and share Black-led products. It's free. That's right. And it's for everyone. And it's your chance to see how you can level up your daily routine with Black-led products that are creating a new world of choices at Walmart. Trust me, you don't want to miss it.
It was May, I never forget, it was May 2016. Mm-hmm. And the video was about male groupies. And, you know, when we started to witness this new phenomenon
mm-hmm.
of the guys Lord. Wanting to be in the pictures in the VIP section more than the girls.
Pushing them off the couch, move.
That's what the video was.
Yeah.
The video was about y'all are coming in the VIP section, mm-hmm. pushing the girls out the way mm-hmm. so y'all can sneak selfies and stand next to rappers and ball players.
Mm.
And I said, I remember it was like the cha-cha. We need y'all to move to the left. Slide to the right.
So we get this selfie.
And let these girls get in here in this VIP section, right. man. Get out the way.
Right.
So at that time, what I was doing and the way I was doing it was different.
Yeah.
And refreshing because it was like, it was coming from a street dude mm-hmm. and it was being delivered exactly the way it was happening.
Yes.
So Meek was the first person to repost.
Mm-hmm.
And he reposted a few more times. Mm-hmm. And then my man Mike Gardner, I think he reached out to Baller Alert.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to my homie Robin. And
yes,
yes,
we love you, Robin Lyon.
I think he reached out to Baller Alert for them to repost mm-hmm. something that he resonated with. And it just kept catching.
It did.
It just kept catching. But what happened is, in terms of the place of responsibility and progressiveness, mm-hmm. I started to realize that it was a place of advice mm-hmm. and to be responsible. In the beginning, it was like I was standing on the corner of 52nd and Parkside.
Mm-hmm.
That's how my mouth was.
Right.
But then I started getting women mm-hmm. in my DM. Asking advice, mm-hmm. men about their relationships. And I remember a 17-year-old kid from Illinois mm-hmm. reached out to me in my DM and said that he didn't have a big brother, he didn't have a dad, but he watches my Instagram every wow. day. And all the advice that he can get,
mm-hmm.
he gets it from me.
Wow.
And that's when it started to change. And then one day, I called Q.
Mm-hmm.
I called Q and I was like, yo, I think I found my purpose.
Mm.
He said, what you mean? I said, dog, this Instagram thing. I say this, I said, it's feeling different.
Yeah.
I said, too many people reaching out to me, telling me what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Means something to them.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I said, this ain't no game. I'm on to something.
Yeah.
And he was like, Baz, he said, do you understand how powerful what you just said is?
Mm-hmm.
And you know me, no, I don't know.
Right.
What's the power in that? I'm just telling you what I'm noticing. And he said, no, Baz, people go their whole life and don't discover their purpose and
no,
why they're
seriously.
Here.
Seriously.
Like, a lot of people don't know what they're here for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sink in
then.
But as time went on,
yeah.
And the more people who reached out, the more people who asked for advice, the more people who saw me in the street, saw me in the airport,
yeah.
Can I take a... I'm like, wait a minute now.
Right.
What's going on around here with this Instagram?
With this Instagram.
I'm getting treated like a rapper outside. You know, but it just goes to show the power of technology.
Absolutely.
Because there's people as far as Nigeria, England.
Yeah.
There's people everywhere that follow my page and they DM me. And see, the thing about it is I DM everybody back.
Oh, you talk. That's good. You talk to everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Like, they know I respond to every DM. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my job.
That's what's up, right?
I'm a DM
I'm here
responder.
For the people. Right.
Yeah, I'm a, that's, what do you do for I respond to DMs? You know, I respond to DMs.
Yes.
And so it continued. And the more it went that way, the more I realized I could still be me.
Yep.
I could still be raw. I could still be uncut. But I don't have to be abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be vulgar. I don't have to use, you know, profanity in the sense of, you know, just vulgar and vile words.
Yeah.
You know, I had to learn that part. But I'm glad I learned it myself. No one ever had to say to me, hey, you know, you're dope, but why don't you tone it down a little?
Right.
You know, I discovered that on my own.
That's good.
I trained myself to say, like, nah, you know. Stop using the N word so much.
Mm.
Definitely kind of abandoned the B word. Like, that's really not
good.
That,
yeah, really let that go.
That's really not a good one.
Right.
Yeah, kind of just, that one to the side.
Right. Yeah, just let that
you
go.
Know, so is it, but
slide
it,
to the left.
You know, yeah, to the right.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, and then Instagram Live.
Mm-hmm.
I went live every single day at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, yeah.
For about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Every night.
Yeah.
It was like a TV show.
Yeah, it was.
You know what I mean? So, you know, so these are the things that, you know, that brought us to where we are now.
Yeah.
I mean, now I'm shadow banned because I talk too real.
You're like, all right now, you live too much.
Hey, ho, now he's leading the people a little too much now.
Right, yeah.
You know, he's a little too influential.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, that's where we are now. Like, the more positive you are, the kind of less you're being seen, depending on, you know, what your algorithm is looking like.
Denora, it's the algorithm.
It's the algorithm. The no rhythm. They're
right.
Giving you no rhythm.
No rhythm at all.
They don't want you to have no rhythm now.
Yeah, or
you know,
rhythms,
but
yeah.
I'm past, I'm beyond how many followers. I'm beyond, you know, a blue check.
Yeah.
Because it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
The people know now.
They do know.
The people know. You know, I'm outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm on platforms.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on couches. I'm being guest, you know, making guest appearances, and so the word is out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a day late and a dollar short.
They too
you
late.
Know,
yeah.
I've been at 208,000 followers for 8 months.
Oh wow, you are lying.
Dead serious.
Oh, that's the algorithm.
I've been at 208,000 followers since August. So what's August from August to now? However many months that is.
That's crazy.
Yeah, my followers have not moved.
Oh yeah, you definitely.
You know, but hey, again, waited too late. I'm here now.
Yeah, you're here now.
I'm here with sis.
Right.
You know what I mean? We'll get some. We'll get a few off of this, I'm sure.
Yes, you will, because my people, they definitely support. So I want to talk about something a little personal. How you've helped me through my journey, because everybody.
Drum roll, please. Getting to the real thing now. Speed dial.
Speed dial. Listen. You say so many people DM you for advice and relationship advice.
Yes.
Since I have known you and we've grown close, you are the one that I call.
To this day.
About anything. And you always pick
anything.
Up. Anything. I don't.
It's two people. You and Lonnie.
Yeah. Yes.
You and Lonnie. I have to remind y'all, mm-hmm. I am me. I'm brother. Yeah. I don't want to know everything. Stop talking to me like I'm one of the girls. Like, goodness gracious, spare me something. I get it all. Like, but yeah, carry on.
Carry on. Okay, so there has been times where I have been like angry, mm-hmm. and I can call you, and you'll either talk me off a ledge or be like, "What I need to do." Like,
yeah,
you're like
only two solutions, and that's
yeah.
What do I need to do, or how can I reroute your emotions right
exactly.
now?
Exactly, and I love you for that. So, lastly, I want to talk about your book, Flip Your Life.
Yeah,
I'm so
had to do that.
You had to do that. Tell
the
me
book
about
and
it.
The flip. had to
I'm
do
so
the book
happy
and
you did
the flip
for real, and then did the book. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if I didn't flip, the book couldn't have came.
Yeah, exactly. What prompted you say, hey, I need to write a book?
Believe it or not, the book idea started when I was locked up.
Wow.
So the book idea started in 1998.
Wow.
In jail, bored, mm-hmm. prison actually. Mm-hmm. In prison, bored. I took the yellow notepad, started writing. Mm-hmm. That got old quick.
Mm, yeah.
Didn't complete it. Mm-hmm. Moved on to something else. Fast forward to 2017, 18, the idea revisited me because I felt like now is time. I got a lot under my belt now. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot, seen a lot,
yeah.
been through a lot. And now there's a story to tell.
Yeah.
If I would have did it in 98, it would have been a bunch of glorified street shit. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want that,
yeah.
which is what I did not do. Mm-hmm. So what I did, the foundation of the book is based on what my mother said about being hard-headed.
Yeah.
You're going to learn everything the hard way because you don't listen. Mm. So the book is compiled of situations and the outcomes of me not listening.
Mm. Yeah.
From her to me not listening to my friends that told me stop carrying those guns.
Yeah.
The book came at a time where I felt like I had enough experience. Mm-hmm. And the social media was really bubbling and starting to really bubble. Mm-hmm. But I realized that a lot of people didn't know where I came from.
Wow.
They were like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
He just fell out the sky
uh-huh.
with all this game. He talking, right? But
right.
who is he?
Who is he?
And why do all these celebrities know him? He's yeah, not right. a rapper.
Right.
He's not a singer. We don't know him, but we don't know him, but it seemed like everybody else know him. What are we missing?
Right, exactly.
So what I did with the book, again, is a compilation of my experiences from not listening. Mm-hmm. to some of the things that I talk about on social media, how to interact with the police, mm-hmm. The importance of duality with co-parenting and
yeah.
being respectful even when the relationship is over
mm.
and accepting that your child's father or your child's mother has someone new in their life that's gonna be around your child and
yeah.
how you should conduct yourself. Like all of that's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it gave people a bird's eye view of, okay, mm-hmm. this is who he is,
yeah.
this is where he comes from, and this is why what he says resonates so much because it's really authentic.
Right.
He didn't Google this stuff, he'd be telling
he
us.
He went through this stuff.
He really lived this.
I love that. I love that. Make sure you guys get the book.
Please.
Please get the book.
Please, because y'all know I'll go back in them streets.
Right.
No, I won't.
We don't want that.
No, I won't. But I do want y'all to get that book, though.
Yes, get the
help
book.
Pay these bills.
I know that's right. Brother, I appreciate you.
No, for sure. I mean, this was. I'm happy about this.
Me too.
I'm just not just me being here. I'm just happy about this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
This is so cool, man.
Yes, I appreciate it.
Yeah, this is super cool.
Thank you. Right now, we're gonna do my favorite part of the show. It's called Positive Outcomes, where the listeners write in and we give them advice. So I'm gonna read a letter from one of our listeners and. I'm going to let you give advice.
Oh, wow.
The best
I like
advice.
That.
It says, "Hi, Crystal. I wasn't raised in the church the same way I hear others speak about their experiences. Even still, I always knew God, and most of my life, I've only had God to depend on. In my younger years, God was all I needed. But as I grow older, I feel like my faith is decreasing in ways that I've never struggled before. I'm 25 years old, and I've been on my own since the age of 17. God continues to sustain me and provide for me, but I'm lacking some key pieces: loving parents, a community, a college education, financial literacy, etc. Last year, I was blessed with most of my prayers being answered while losing everything I already had. Starting over was a very humbling experience. I expected 25 to be a great year, if not my best year, and I often wonder if it was something I did that caused this on me. I love God with all my heart, and it breaks my heart that I feel this way. However, I know God has me because only He can sustain a person that lacks all these things, and considering my upbringing, I'm doing well for myself. How do you find the hustle within your pain? What does the balance between knowing you're blessed but also suffering look like? I look at you and I'm inspired because I know it's not easy. I need to get back on my feet, and I truly believe that I need to work harder and release myself from the victim mindset. But I just don't know how or where to start. Please help." Okay. Let's see.
You know what I noticed when a lot of people ask for advice, and this young lady included? A lot of people don't realize they answer their own question.
That's crazy. Tyler said the same thing when he was like, "Read the back," and he was like, "She answered her own question in the question."
Oh wow!
No, that's
See, TP. So what that means is, you know, man, you need to get together, have an executive sit down, because that means we think alike, which means I should be on that type of paper wave that you want. You know, my money running low, so we'll talk soon, P. But no, she answered her own question because she has the faith. She has the faith. She understands who's in control. She understands. She has that understanding.
Yeah.
What she has to do is stay acclimated to the patience and the belief of what she knows to be true, right? Meaning, she believes in God. She knows that God is in control.
Yeah.
So she has to be patient. But what I like to tell people, be patient. But be patient in motion. Don't be patient and stagnant. Don't be patient and still. Be patient, but still have movement.
Yeah.
Because what she's going through is, in my opinion, she's not looking inside herself and being okay with what her success may be. I tell people, don't reject your reality chasing what may be someone else's fantasy. A lot of people look at other people's lives and they minimize their own. She said she named a couple different spots in there where she's blessed.
Every answered prayer.
So sometimes, and this is very important for people to understand, Faith, sometimes our success is we are able to pay the bills. We did wake up today. We're not running from bill collectors. We are in good health. Our family structure is okay. Now I understand there were spots where she wished she had a better relationship.
Loving parents.
You know, like loving parents.
Community,
and a community. But she has to understand those are people.
Come on now.
Parents are people. And sometimes, you know, blood makes you related. Loyalty makes you family. And unfortunately, sometimes people have these issues, you know, with their parents, with their siblings. And I would never tell anybody to sever ties with kith and kin. However, I will say that when people, whether you are family members or not, when they make your life difficult, you have a right to not intertwine yourself in negativity. So whatever you have to do to preserve yourself, especially when it comes to parents, respectfully, you know, you still have a duty to be respectful, even if you had the worst parents in the world. And if you have to and if you have to respect them by staying away from them,
right,
do that. But what I believe this young lady should do is, identify all her pluses.
Yeah.
Let's put our minuses to the side. Mm-hmm. Look at all your pluses. Compare them to your minuses.
Yeah.
I guarantee you the minuses will be something that somebody else has that she thinks she should have.
Always. 9 times out of 10 it is.
9 times out of 10, the minus is I don't have this over there and I think I should.
Right.
Meanwhile, I could find a multitude of people. You can take her life exactly as it is right now, mm-hmm. and they'll think they're living like the Princess of Wales.
No. It's so crazy because a lot, like, you can, my mom used to always tell me, it's somebody out there that is doing much. You think you're having a bad day, honey. Somebody wishes.
Let me say this, and I'm gonna sit up a little bit, because this is very important. It's like what you just said. There's somebody else that's going through much more. Mm-hmm. But here's what a lot of people will do, Face. Mm-hmm. Shabazz, that's easy for you. Mm-hmm. You live in Miami in a penthouse, and you drive this, and you, Crystal, that's easy for you to say. Mm-hmm. You did this, and you got that, and you on TV. And you, this is what people forget. They forget what they don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't know Shabazz lived in a crack house for 10 months.
Wow.
They don't know Shabazz lived in another crack house after that and used to wake up smacking roaches off his face. They don't know what you went through for in order for this to become your blessing.
They don't.
You understand me? Mm-hmm. So people will think it's easy for us to be encouraging. It's easy for us to say we got faith. No, we are encouraging and we have faith because our lives are testaments of what being faithful brings. Because I know mine is.
Yeah.
That's why I stick with what I do. This is why I stick to speaking engagements. This is why I stick to motivation, because that's my job. I don't know where the money coming from sometime, y'all. I don't have a salary.
Yeah.
You understand me?
Same, yeah.
You know, I don't have a salary. I don't know, you know, if I'm gonna make $100,000 this year or if I'm gonna make 50. But what I do know is as long, or what I believe, what I do believe is that as long as I do what I'm doing, I'll continue to receive what I've been receiving. So I stay the course. This young lady, she has to figure out, again, going back to purpose. Are you operating within your purpose? So take your pluses, sweetheart, and put your pluses on the table.
Yeah.
Sit your minuses aside. Because if you concentrate on what you're good at and what you're blessed at, that'll get too much. That'll get so much attention that what you don't have won't even matter, because you'll be fulfilled over here.
Yeah, that's real. I love that.
She's looking for fulfillment.
She is. Yeah.
But she should concentrate on what's going right.
Yeah.
Because the things that's going wrong are maybe not necessarily wrong. It may not be meant.
That was the word. I like that.
Yeah, it might not be meant.
That's good. Thank you. I don't have nothing to add to that. That was good.
Pastor Baz on one time.
Pastor Baz. All right. We're going to do what I'm going through and what I'm growing through.
Okay.
And right now in life, I am, there's so much going on. I have a lot on my plate right now. So juggling things, managing my anxiety. I was talking to Denora today about she's in a season of surrender, and I need to surrender some things myself and completely let it go and pray on some things. But right now I am trying to manage everything and manage this anxiety, because it wasn't until last year that I realized I even had anxiety. But just keeping that under control, and understanding that I have everything I need, I lack nothing, and just letting God take it, because a lot of times we put more on ourselves than we have to, and I'm very guilty of that.
Yes.
What about you?
Shockingly, the same thing.
Really?
I just never had an attack.
Mm-hmm.
But I worry.
Yeah.
I be anxious. Because sometimes you just don't know.
Yeah.
You're unsure.
All right, lastly, we're going to do Keep It Blank, Sweetie. And for this episode, I'm going to say keep it 100, sweetie. Keep it 100.
Keep it accountable, sweetie.
Come on now.
Yeah, keep it accountable.
I love it.
Yeah.
Everybody, my big brother Shabazz, thank you so much.
Thanks for having
me, Faith.
Thank
you.
This was a jewel.
Yes.
And a gem and a box of jewelry.
I love it.
I love this. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you guys for tuning in. If you want to write into our positive outcome listener letter, write into keepitpositivesweetie@gmail.com, and that's sweetie with an IE. You can follow me on all platforms at Love Crystal Renee, and that's LUV Crystal Renee. Shabazz, tell the people where they can find you.
Ooh, I almost said so I ain't got no business saying.
Don't do that.
You can find me at Shabazz the OG,
S-H-A-B-A-Z-Z-T-H-E-O-G
on Instagram. I'm not real on a lot of other social platforms. However, I do have a podcast named after the book Flip Your Life.
Yes.
And you can subscribe to that at tmtdigitalnetwork.com.
I love it. All right. Make sure you guys tap in with him. In the meantime, in between time, you know what to do. Keep it positive, sweetie. Love y'all.